If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Well, hello. How are you?
It's been so long.
How have you been? Welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for your ears, for your time, for your attention on my Pride and Joy, my podcast, where I get to chat to incredible people about the relationship between film and music, be those producers, writers, directors, composers, actors. We have no goalposts. We just want to have great chats. And I really hope that you enjoy the fruits of my labour. It doesn't feel like labour. It is absolutely joyful. And this is kind of a part two, or part three, really, of a caught-stealing sonic special. As composer Rob Simonson joins us to discuss his contribution to Darren Aronofsky's latest movie and plenty more besides. My chat with Joe from Idols is also available. I loved chatting to Joe, who was wondering about Brooklyn as we had our chat. Might be the best signal I've ever had on a remote chat. As indeed is the episode with Darren Aronofsky. So do check those out if you haven't already. But do you know what? It was absolutely wonderful to get the chance to chat to Rob on his own, so that it gave us the opportunity to dive deeper into his process as well as some of his other career highlights. He was absolutely wonderful to spend time with. But we'll begin with a cue from Caught Stealing. This is Blessings and Successes. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
I saw you this time last year very fleetingly, didn't I, at the proms?
Yeah, that's when we met in person, and that was a lovely night. You were a most excellent MC.
Oh, I get to do it again this Thursday, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they're doing a kind of thriller night, mainly Bernard Herrmann, but lots of other people as well. So yeah, it's going to be super exciting. Yeah, looking forward to that. But listen, I'm actually kind of like, I'm really glad I get to chat to you on your own, to be honest, because it gives us an opportunity to obviously celebrate this incredible film, Caught Stealing, and how important the music is to that. But also kind of diving into, you know, some of your other work as well, and not have Joe take all the limelight, basically.
Did you talk with him on his own yesterday?
I did, yeah. It was brilliant. He was like literally in total kind of, you know, rock star scenario of like just walking down the street in Brooklyn on his phone recording the podcast. But it was, the quality was unbelievable. And then randomly being like stopped by people and going, "Hey Rob," and all this kind of, it's so funny.
Cool.
Yeah, it was great. I thought it'd be really nice just to talk about how you started working with Darren, first of all, because you know, this is not your first rodeo with him. But how did you guys start working together?
I think that they were temping on the whale and some of my stuff, actually, I think from Foxcatcher made it into the cut. And I think that they, you know, liked that stuff. And I woke up one Monday morning with a text from Jason Reitman, actually, who said, I just wrote a love letter about you to Darren Aronofsky. And I was like, what is this? Being pumped? Is this real? And then my agent called a little later and said, you know, are you around? Darren wants to know if you can talk at 11. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we jumped on a call and he told me a little bit about the film. And he said the conversation about composers is, you know, I got the impression this wasn't a big call, you know, and they like a cattle call.
Mm.
And so they were interested. And I said, yeah, this sounds amazing. Send me the film. And I watched it. And then the next day we chatted and then he said, all right, let's do it. And so it all happened very quickly. Yeah. Within 2 or 3 days, it went from introduction to getting hired and starting to work on things. And mostly it was all working remotely, COVID times and all.
Yeah. People had to get kind of used to that really quickly, didn't they? I can't remember who I was speaking to. Oh, it was Trent Anatakis from Mank, and how that every musician recorded remotely for that score. And how they, I mean, that just blows my mind kind of thing. And there's been a couple of times as well where the composers never met the director in person until maybe not even until after the film's out sort of thing, depending on what part of the world, which is kind of crazy, but also brilliant as well, isn't it?
I mean, it's completely changed the game. I think I've had two directors since the beginning of COVID actually come over to my place. And that used to be a very normal thing.
Mm.
And now it's a rarity. Deadpool, I didn't see Sean until we were recording.
Wow.
You know, the tech has come along and people accept it. And I think in a lot of ways, people love it. I mean, they can just sit on their couch, pop on FaceTime, and as long as they have a good set of headphones,
yeah,
you know, it's pretty good. And I think in fact it's kind of better for them to have headphones because they're used to hearing things in that way. The other thing about headphones is it cancels out the room. That's one of the biggest things. And Apple headphones things translate very well. So it's just kind of works, and it provides this flexibility. And I think, you know, people have just dreamed about it. And now that you can work on a laptop anywhere, I mean, it's kind of the sky's the limit. I mean,
yeah.
I find a little village on a mountainside in Japan and work from there.
Amazing.
I mean, we'll see. Yeah.
Living the dream.
And I think it's that way for everyone that's working on stuff. Also, there's no replacement for being in person. There's just not. Because you're trying to get things in a window of time when you're on a Zoom, you're not going to sit there all day. Whereas if you're in the same vicinity or space, or you have a room and in like a suite of rooms at an edit, which is what I end up doing on a lot of New York films, at least come out and post up somewhere. And then people can just kind of come by, and then there's really no replacement for that. But that tends to be phases of it. It's not required for the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's just this brave new world. And I don't know, I think people like it. I mean, we live in a, we're working music. I mean, we didn't get into this to be in offices.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the ideal scenario for you with the project, Rob? Is it in terms of when you're brought in? Because I find it so interesting the different stages that the conversation with music starts, and it's different with every director and composer and project. Sometimes it's even as the script's been written, or it might be, you get a pass of the script before anything's been shot. Do you have a preferred point of entry, I guess, for starting to think about it?
Yeah, I think script is always ideal. Well, I shouldn't say ideals, because script can also lead you down the wrong path if what you end up seeing feels very different than what the script is, and that definitely happens. But at least to give yourself a chance to have a clean swipe at something, the only dictates are just what you've read, right? So then all of your imaginings are kind of yours. And so sketching from that point is really lovely. And it's definitely happened that I sketch and I think this is going to work beautifully. And then you see it and you put it up against picture and it's like, this music doesn't feel like how this film looks. Pace of the dialogue or the tone of it. And so, there's like certain points at which you have to check the work. And I don't know, there's some scores that I did in like 3 weeks that turned out really great. Like Spectacular Now was like, I think, yeah, it was like a month. And there's just something about like, okay, they're not messing around too much with the cut. The feel of it is there. They like addressed a lot of issues, and you can kind of come in and then you're just putting icing on the cake. Whereas if you come in really early, you're part of them figuring out how this cake is going to work. They're like, we have this ingredients, but we don't know if we're going to make it. An upside down cake or a layered or a tres leches or what it is. And so you're in this process of trying a lot of different things or going through, when they have a test and they get a note that makes them rethink something and then you've got to rethink. So it's definitely can be a bit more laborious the earlier you get on. But I find that if you strike something that is additive, if you can find something musically that's, I'm sure that you've talk about this all the time with everyone that you talk about or talk with, but there's something that you're not seeing on screen. I think a lot of times the best place to find that is when you're just, you have kind of minimal input. And if you can have a clear feeling for something, then sometimes you put it on and it's magic and it's something that's unexpected because you're not trying to work within the confines of the edit. So I don't know. That's a long-winded, rambling answer
No,
that
so insightful. It's brilliant. And then you've also got to throw performance into that as well, I imagine, because it might be that you read a script and you see a character being played one way, and then you watch the performance by someone, and it's a living thing, isn't it?
it's like clothes, You can stitch together the best costume for the character that's in your mind, but then when the actor walks up and you put him in, it's like, oh, this looks funny. That doesn't look right at all. We
He's
can't
not
wait. Who
supposed to
added
be
that?
a
Whose
clown.
idea was that? But sometimes you get those great wins where it's like, I never would have drawn that had I been trying to graft that onto the character. But now that you put it on, it opens up this third thing. And that's why sometimes, I feel like filmmakers can put some piece of music on something. And sometimes it's like wildly unexpected. And as politely as I can, it's like, that doesn't work. I see what you're going for, but this is like really out of left field. But I understand what you're going for.
It must be really refreshing, though, as well, when a director is looking to do things differently. And that's kind of what I think Darren's done brilliantly with kind of marrying you and Joe and Idols together for this, in terms of, like I said to Darren when I spoke to him, I remember when I first started at MTV and I got sent to New York to interview the Beastie Boys, my first time I'd ever been in New York. And I was like all kinds of shit scared and kind of excited and, kind of, I was kind of everything. I was like about to self-combust. But I remember how I felt when I got to New York, and it was everything about it. It was the kind of the noise, the smell, how it felt walking, along the street, people that you saw. And I feel like he's managed to kind of capture a real sensual way of experiencing this film in Caught Stealing, in terms of, you kind of feel like you're there more so than I've felt for a long time with a film in terms of, and you know, I guess that part, that's because it's, you know, it's his hood, you know, but to really lean into the kind of sonic nature of that part of New York at that time, it kind of had to be something different and its own thing in a way.
Yeah, just thinking about the sounds of a band, a punk band, like the kind of sounds that you would hear from these music venues that are peppered all over here, and you're going out and not even so much always the songs, but just the sounds of bands, amp hum in the air. And I mean, I don't know how well worn this conversational path is, because I didn't hear what the other guys said, but
I want to hear what you got to say. Don't worry about them.
I'm not going to worry about them at all. But to me, it was so cool because it's this idea of diegetic sound from a live band that's being appropriated as score. And it was interesting to try to capture that and how deliberately we had to work to try and get things like fumbly in the right way to feel alive. It works really well, and it adds grit. And it's not, you know, a orchestral professional musician that's been trained to play beautifully their whole lives, but it's just this kind of like raw cacophonous thing. And I think it helps, put you in that time and place and in a certain attitude. Staying on 7th and Avenue B right now at a friend's place. So I'm in these neighborhoods. I'm in this area. And, you know, when the Idols did their little kind of secret show the other night, it was literally a block from here. Just walking around at night and feeling that energy like you felt, it's just New York is popping. And it's dangerous in a way that it brings you to life.
Yeah.
That's one of the really important things about New York, actually. And I've been coming to New York for a long time, and I had an apartment here for a while. And the feeling of walking around on a weekend night, it makes you alive, and it forces you to pay attention in a way that a lot of other places in the world don't. Certainly LA, which is where I've spent a lot of time living. You don't have to like have your brain on for very much. You are in your safe place. For many people, you're in your safe place. There's obviously a lot of like rough areas in LA, but it's a car culture, right? It's a car.
Nobody walks anywhere.
You don't walk anywhere. So, you know, you can get in your car and drive to where you're going to go. And when you're just walking around, like, you're with the rats and you're with the filth and the garbage on the streets and the people from the homeless to the billionaires. It's like everyone is on the streets. You know, maybe the billionaires aren't. That's the ones that we know about aren't always out there. But, you know, rich and poor alike. And there's weather, you know, there's flooding and there's trains breaking down. And it's just like you have to kind of, you have to earn it in New York. And it's gritty in that way that it requires grit, you know, to survive and thrive and make it through. And I think that's one of the things about Austin's character in the film that, you know, New York in that time period especially is so perfect for this guy who's like going to be toughened up by the streets.
Yeah, I'm from a little fishing village in Scotland, and it's kind of a million miles away from kind of, you know, New York. And I just remember going there. You know, I had people that I knew when I was going out there for work. And then I went back again and I stayed. A friend who used to work at like 60 Thompson, and I stayed there. And I'd just go out on my own at night, you know, and kind of meet people that I knew were going to be at this bar or this gig and that gig. It'd be, I just always felt safe, weirdly, kind of, you know. I don't think New York kind of had a reputation, or, and I know that obviously there are parts of it, but I don't know, maybe like you say, it's that kind of courage, that bravery that it kind of can sometimes instill in you. And I feel like that really comes through in the music, in that it kind of feels like a little bit like it gives Austin's character confidence in situations.
Yeah, and it's not, I said dangerous. I don't know if I agree with that, because I also feel like, sure, New York is a dangerous city, but it also, to a certain extent, it's like, it's a place that could chew you up and spit you out, but also it will embrace you and nurture you and take care of you. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about New York, is that there's a camaraderie here, but also there's impatience. And not so much danger, but like, you gotta be awake. You gotta be awake. And yeah, I mean, it was so cool to see all the sets that Darren built, replicating how things looked back in the 90s. And, you know, in some areas, like, still looks very similar. I wasn't hanging around in the mid 90s down here very much. I had come here, but yeah, it's like, it's really cool to see a period piece set like that. I don't know that I've really seen something like that before.
Did that kind of mean there were like limitations in a way in terms of what you could use or what you could write, I guess?
Well, the whole exercise of this score was, or the puzzle of it was, you know, this became the idea, was using the Idols as our orchestra, our house band. And that meant that I needed to understand them as musicians, as a band, and as individuals, in terms of, you know, what their capabilities are, what their, you know, where they lean. So it was a bit of a process of creating things that felt a bit like shells, because I didn't want to be super prescriptive. And that was an interesting balance between, oh, we have to test this, so we have to get this cue done, and it needs to be doing all of these things.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a learning curve as we were going. And I just tried to listen to what they're doing and kind of get a feel for how they make their sounds. And then I'm also coming with my own production sensibility, kind of thing, and loop based things and processing sounds and pitching things around. And so it was this like kind of fumbling around in the dark a little bit, but we just kind of formed some ideas. And then once we got in and worked together in the studio for the first time, that was really enlightening and really fun. And one of the biggest discoveries in terms of how we were going to score this film, or just in terms of the process in general, or working with them in general, was like, they are really keen on film. They're very keen storytellers, and they're very intelligent in that way. And they have perspectives. That was really great. And we got to talk filmically. And I think, you know, a lot of times we would end up talking filmically before talking musically. And that seemed to be putting us in the right direction. So I just tried to not do anything that felt out of character for them.
Yeah.
I wanted to feel honest. And my hope was to have it kind of like meet in the middle and stretch them a little bit, but not in terms of technical fireworks. I think maybe just in terms of like concept of what these pieces were that we were making.
I love those moments that feel like almost kind of going back to what you were saying about that idea of the kind of the rawness and the authenticity of like a band as well. And sometimes those kind of little instrumental cues feel like you've almost walked past a really great venue and you've heard a band sound check and they've just been kind of, you know, they've just come up with something amazing whilst they've been jamming in sound check sort of thing as well. It's got such kind of, it just feels live. It feels kind of like unrehearsed, but perfect for the situation that it's in, but the character that it's, you know, around and the relationship it's around or the emotion that it's around as well. It's really, really great.
Oh, wow, that's very kind of you. Yeah, that's great to hear. I mean, having it feel alive was definitely what was very important to me. And that's why, you know, I was trying to always keep it authentic in terms of something that, yeah, like if somebody was absentmindedly doing something, right? And that doesn't mean that they're flubbing it. You know, it could have a lot of energy and intensity behind it. But just this kind of experimental moment.
Yeah.
Where absentmindedly just kind of doing something and feeling it. And so, I mean, it was really fun. I mean, there was so much material and it was a process of taking moments here and there and kind of putting things together and then making compositions and then having them replace certain things that I had done and then taking other things and using it as a base for other things. It was really, really fun. And those guys are so full of heart and tireless. They are such hard workers. They're game for anything. They'll go as long as you want to go. And I was really chuffed.
Yeah. You spent a lot of time with them. It's coming through. Inspiring as well when you think of the range of what you work on and with, you know, looking at the last couple of years or whatever, you know, Caught Stealing, Elio, Deadpool, Wolverine, you know, that's three very, very different films. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of, I don't know, that just that variety is just brilliant. You know, not everybody gets the chance to do that. Sometimes composers can get really sort of pigeonholed or kept within the sort of, you know, they're in their lane sort of thing as well. But you have this brilliant ability to really kind of flutter around so many different types of films. Is that really important for you?
I think it's just something that's happened as opportunities have come my way and I've said yes to them and said yes to the adventure of trying something new.
Yeah.
Because I love the discovery of it. And I feel like there's definitely a handful of films where I'm kind of doing a similar thing. And it just feels like I know how to do this. I can kind of do it in my sleep. Not that those films are ever easy. Like films are always, you know, you never know where the ultimate puzzles and challenges are going to lie, even if the music seems kind of straightforward. But I'm always up for like diving into something that lights me up. And there's just so much that lights me up.
Mm.
I spent so much time growing up listening to jazz and like the kind of like fusion eras of jazz, like Electric Miles and things like that. And listening to Aphex Twin and a lot of electronic music for a long time. And I bounce around. I listen to all sorts of things. Mm. And what I'm always kind of searching for is something that sparks my imagination.
Yeah.
And gives me goosebumps. So I'm always excited when it's like, okay, now I get to play with that thing and I get to learn about that thing. So I was game for this and I feel like Just the idea of having such a limited instrumental palette. I mean, I was doing a lot of my own kind of like creating sounds and bringing that in, but working with a band in this way was, it was super exciting. And coming directly to this from this huge orchestral like Pixar thing that could not have been more different. To me, in my brain, like there's so many similarities in terms of like how I'm thinking about scoring things and whatnot. But in the end product, yeah, it's like, whoa, could not be more different. But to me, it's all just part of playing sandbox and like bringing in different colors and shapes. And I think that really keeps it interesting for me.
You mentioned Deadpool and Wolverine earlier, and the idea of kind of navigating that those beasts. You know, that is a, I mean, it's a circus, isn't it? You know, in terms of like what you've got to, I don't know, but like, you know, there's so much going on in that film, and there's so much going on with those characters. And it's kind of like, I don't know, is it just kind of like, let me get in there kind of thing, and sort of, you know, and play with it? Or is it intimidating with something like that?
Yeah, I don't know that it was intimidating so much. I mean, I think the thing about that film that was a discovery when I got into it was how much their concept of the score was to support this emotion, this like kind of emotional buddy film, you know, that Sean was making. And at first I thought, this is just going to be full on bonkers, bananas. Like just NPC wild sound effects just going everywhere.
No, we're
And
going for Brokeback Mountain here.
yeah, exactly. And I was like, oh, right, of course, that makes sense. So it wasn't this like kind of constant bonkers thing. And that was another exercise in, I mean, you know, look, at the end of the day, I'm hired to support the film. So the film that the filmmaker is making, you know, they're leading the charge. So at that point, it was just buckling in and finding the elegant way of achieving that. But certainly when we're playing outside of established boxes, that's makes me feel pretty excited and alive. Coloring book, you know, you're like making more of a piece of art, and you can define the edges more on your own and like find those edges with your filmmaker. And the filmmaker is always going to be the one to ultimately help define the shape. But you know, the best experiences are where you're doing that together and like, let's explore and see how far we can push. And then, you know, if it's not right, why is it not right? And let's have a mind meld in terms of we have similar taste in terms of that. We know that that's too far, or that's not the right thing. But sometimes you can find people that will go and you end up in new territory. I mean, oddly enough, that happened at Deadpool with the Madonna thing. You know, that's not really a piece of score per se, but I mean, it's all, you know, I wrote the whole thing and it was this whole edited sequence that was concocted. You know, it's not in the script. And so Shane, the editor, locked himself in a room for 3 days and came out with that. And it was like, okay, let's go for something here. And you know, the Madonna of it all was super funny and interesting and very cool. And but you know, I got to weave in some stuff from the score. And a lot of times when you're dealing with something else that's established, you're kind of just taking a victory lap on it. I mean, the few times that I've done that, like with Stranger Things and whatnot, you know, you're dealing with like this valuable piece of music that people know and they love, and you get to kind of reinvent it and find new chords to create interest where people are so used to hearing this in a certain way, but you recontextualize it. And it's super fun. I mean, it's kind of similar to doing string arrangements for pop songs, which I used to do with
Did
people.
you?
Yeah, a little bit. There were some record producers down the hall when I was working for Michael Dana, when we had studios in Hollywood. And they would have like some young up and coming artists, and I was like a cheap and very motivated little composer down the hallway that they could talk into like giving the absolute best I had. And so it was, but it was always pretty fun because like the pressure is off. You're just decorating a little bit.
That's brilliant. I love that. What about in terms of when you're thinking about kind of what's next in terms of what you want to do? What do you lean into in terms of what's helping you make that decision about either, taking a meeting with someone, if it's a director, or reading a script, or what are you looking for? What's the spark you're after?
Really good question. You should like have a podcast or something.
I'm going to write that down, actually.
Yeah, don't forget that. That's really a great question. I mean, more and more, I'm just on a personal level thinking more about the human condition. I think part of that is my age. I'm in my late 40s now and have seen a bit of the world and have worked in a bit of the world. And, I think that there's this inflection point when you hit midlife and your illusions have been tested and you start seeing things with different eyes. And, I've always loved films that are really thoughtful. There's a lot of sci-fi movies and films that have kind of a fantasy element to them that can afford like fantastical reality or surrealness, actually, I think is a better word. Films that have a surrealness to it that enable them to kind of go into a very psychological place. There's so many films, but Akira Kurosawa's Dreams is a great example of that. And that's a film that I've loved for a long time, just like stamped with a feeling that's so distinct. And it's not necessarily achieved with words. It's tone and it's this visceral kind of grip. Arrival is one of my favorite films of the
Oh
last
my
decade.
God, yeah.
And incredible score by Johan. And it grapples to me, it's like it transcends itself in a certain way. And it's about so many things, and it's such a beautifully woven narrative through a very personal arc of drama that extends to like what it means to exist as a human in linear time, and connects to so many interesting ideas about language. And so these things, really light me up. And look, I have so much fun working on entertaining popcorn films. There's fun and they for sure have their place, and I watch them and I enjoy them. But I think things that kind of shake me up and help me shift my perspective. Under the Skin is a film I put in that category, and Zone of Interest too, and films that have some teeth that are saying something about the human condition.
There's a great little film coming out on Friday here in the UK. I'm not sure. It's called Paul and Paulette Take a Bath. It's a little French film.
Sounds French.
Paul et Paulette. On the surface, it's a kind of like road trip romance, but it's really not at all. It's like it's really clever. Yeah, and I saw Chloe Zhao's new film last week, Hamnet. Holy shit, that like knocked me for six. And it's like, yeah, okay, it's about William Shakespeare, but it's like, it's really not. It's just about trying to deal with what life throws at you. It's really, really sort of meditative almost in a way, but so powerful. It's really good. There's a little recommendation from me. Can I have a recommendation from you, please?
Oi.
What was the Kurosawa film you were talking about there?
Dreams.
Dreams.
Have you not seen it?
No.
Oh, wow.
Right, there we go.
It's
I'm going to be up till 2 in the morning.
it's a yeah, it's a collection of like little vignettes that are based on dreams that he's had. So
Oh.
like some of them are incredibly abstract, but they're kind of theatrical. In a sense, they have a kind of sense of kabuki to them, and they're meditative and they're compelling, and Yeah, I mean, since the first time I saw it, such a strong little flavor in my brain that when I think about certain moments, it brings me to a place that is pretty unique. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Great. What a great one. Thank you for your time today. It's really lovely to chat to you. I feel like we've just scratched the surface, to be honest. So I hope it's the first of many times we get the opportunity to chat. But huge congratulations on Caught Stealing. It really is. I feel like as well there are moments in like film music where it's kind of like it's a gear shift and it kind of it makes people go, oh, we can do that. And I feel like you guys have done that with this, and it feels so different. It works so well. I can't wait to have one in the car again tomorrow, to be honest.
Ah, well,
Yeah.
that's sweet. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And it's a real pleasure speaking with you. I love
Yeah.
how you think about this stuff and how you talk about this stuff. So
Oh, thanks, Rob. I'm just really nosy.
Well, you do it in a welcoming way, so you figured out a good angle.
Oh, well, I hope I get to do it for a very long time. I hope to see you in person soon. Let us know if you're coming across this way at all. And I'm looking forward to the live playback actually of Caught Stealing
Yeah.
in a venue. That would be amazing.
I know that's been a dream since the beginning.
I'm already thinking of venues that it should be happening at. Oh man, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And yeah, take care. Enjoy the rest of your day. Caught Stealing. That was Flushing Queens by Rob Simonson and Idols, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Rob. I wanted to read out a couple of emails that I got in, actually. In fact, I'm just going to do one today because this was really, really nice. This was an email that came in from JT in Chicago. Thank you for a wonderful summer of podcast episodes. Ah, oh, thanks, JT. I just finished listening to the Eric Idle episode. I wish he was tuned in here in the States. The show sounds so uplifting. He started Spam a lot in Chicago, so I hope he returns in the near future. Anyway, I just wanted you to know that I learned something with each episode you present. And just as with your shows back in the day with Colin, I finished the listening experience being a little lighter and with a little more joy. We need that. Now more than ever in these strange times. All the best, JT in Chicago. JT, thank you so much for your very, very kind words. Chicago, weirdly, is one of those places I'd love to visit. My son and I are rewatching The Bear, and so we are contemplating maybe trying to do a bit of a Bear homage out to Chicago. So if we do, we will get in touch. And if any of you guys want to get in touch, please do. The email address is info@edithbowman.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
My huge thanks to Rob for taking the time to talk to me and the team behind the scenes as well, who helped facilitate that. Caught Stealing is still in UK cinemas and is well worth getting along to see it if you can. Head to edithbowman.com to hear my conversations I mentioned with Joe from Idols and Darren Aronofsky. That is where you'll also find every other single episode of the podcast. And it's Soundtracking UK for socials. If you want to get in touch and just see some nice little excerpts of what we've been up to, get in touch with us. We've also got a YouTube channel. It's called Soundtracking Extra, which we'd really appreciate you subscribing to. That way you get the opportunity to be the first to see and watch and enjoy, whether it be exclusives up there or it be the visual versions of the podcast, loads up there. It'd also be really nice if you had the time, if you could leave us a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. It makes a massive difference, particularly to little independent podcasts like ourselves. Next up then, this is exciting, Emma Thompson. The legend that is Emma Thompson joins me to discuss Dead of Winter. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.